Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Elise Glinka is going to be along a little bit later in the program. And, you know, I was talking with Terry Savage yesterday about that Supreme Court ruling regarding credit cards and charging the extra 2 or 3% and telling customers. We're going to kick it around with Elise as well because I want to get a couple different views on it. I just think it's a sort of interesting development because it's how we buy things these days. But we start with Dennis Rodkin, who writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. He's in the studio today. Dennis, welcome very much to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve.
All right. So I in our little promo, I don't know if they played it or not, but I said Dennis is going to come by, talk about real estate, and we're going to look in people's windows.
Yeah, basically. That's what I do all day.
No, what a nice thing, and it's legal.
yeah.
But let's start up in the near north side here. You write about a house. I think it's on Elm Street.
On Elm
Place.
Yeah.
Is it Elm Place?
Elm Street. Off State.
That comes with not just a garage, but a car inside the garage, a $200,000 Lamborghini.
A $200,000 Lamborghini in the garage. So the listing photos actually show four cars in the garage, but only one of them stays with the house. This Lamborghini, I looked it up. They charge the price for the car is about $210,000 to $300,000. The developer hasn't, you know, I said, well, if I'm a $6 million buyer, I probably already have my Lamborghini, right? He said, well, you know, we can work out a deal, that sort of thing. But yeah, it comes with a Lamborghini already parked in the garage.
Okay, wait, I didn't look at the pictures. You wrote that it's a 25 by 103-foot building.
Right.
Where's the four-car garage?
It's got an alley.
Oh,
it's
okay.
In the back.
Okay, and there's an actual garage back there.
Yeah, there's an actual, well, so it's got a lift, right? So it's not four cars wide. It's a little less wide than that.
Oh, yeah, we all have those.
Yeah,
I know what that is.
One.
You don't have to explain a lift to me.
Because you've got 10 cars in.
I do, yeah.
Stacked up five high.
And they're matchbox cars.
Yeah.
They're really lots of fun. Okay, so, but there are other features to this house, right? Were they kind of trying to just make a show house or?
I think they were really trying to do something unusual. It starts with the fact that there are no side windows because they were replacing an old commercial building, and it went wall to wall. It touches both neighbors' walls. You can't have any windows then, obviously. So what do you do? Well, let's bring a lot of light down in from the top. So they've got a big skylight. It's almost 200 square feet. On the top of the house, and so you're going to bring light down to the second floor, to the first floor, but oh wait, we've got a basement,
right,
what do we do there? So they put a transparent floor, a glass floor, on the first floor, just below the skylight, just that 200 square feet, not the whole thing, so that light comes all the way down into the basement. So in the basement, you have natural light, and the proof, I think I said in the story, is that there are live plants growing in the basement.
They've got
planters.
They've got vines growing up in the basement.
Growing up the side walls all the way nearly to the second floor at this point.
So you could still do secret stuff in the basement. It's not the whole ceiling that's clear.
Yes, I know that that's a priority for you, Steve,
there
is doing secret stuff in the basement.
Every house, you have to have a secret spot, secret stuff spot. Okay.
Yeah, so you can go ahead and get that $6 million house.
So who knows, maybe in 60 or 80 years, someone will be writing to you.
I hope not.
About trying to salvage that house, because that's what's going on now at this big property in Lake Forest.
Yeah.
I love this story. There's a home owned by a Cudahy, right?
Owned by the meat packers, the Cudahys.
And then Clement Stone Jr.
Clement Stone Jr., who left Clement Stone's insurance company to start his own and several other investment companies and things like that.
Massive house that's, I think you write that there's not a single surface that doesn't need to be repaired.
I'll tell you, I walked through it, 22,000 square feet, and I didn't see anything that doesn't need to be repaired. It was built by David Adler for these grand families, and it really is, it's sort of your picture. If you've imagined how people live in mansions in Lake Forest, this is kind of what you're imagining.
Oh, I have.
I'm sure you have. Well, if listeners are imagining how Steve lives in his mansion in Lake Forest, because it's very, I mean, it's huge, and it's got wings that go off in different directions. There are apartments for servants. There's a guest house. There's a greenhouse surrounded by a big garden wall. So on Green Bay Road, which is the street the house is on, you don't even really see the house. It feels like something in a little European village. And inside, it's falling apart. Not falling apart. It's not going to fall down on you, but it hasn't been painted in years. Everything just looks horrible. And outside, I think I said in the story, there are reeds taller than I am growing in the swimming pool. I mean, it hasn't been cared for in a while. And
you write in another story, and we'll get to that in a bit, about how you know, some suburbs are very hot, some others aren't. And the idea is what's sitting on the market. There are a lot of really big, expensive homes sitting on the market in Lake Forest. So this one, they can't figure out how to move.
Yeah, so what they've said, Lake Forest has the biggest of the suburbs, has the biggest backlog of inventory. They have 12 months worth of homes on the market, and more typical is 4 months of worth of homes. The big ones just aren't moving, and there are lots of reasons for that. So what do we do? This one is enormous, and it needs a heck of a lot of work. And they're thinking when you buy the house, you have to put a few million more into it. It's just not worth it to a homeowner.
Did you say what it's on the market for?
$3.6
million. $3.6, okay.
And it could probably cost as much as that to make it livable again, because you got to touch every piece of that 22,000 square feet. So if we can't sell, if a homeowner wouldn't be interested in doing all that, who would? And they've got this really interesting idea, which is supported by the village, though real plans would have to be submitted, that turn it into something else, like turn it into a Mar-a-Lago or turn it into condos or a boutique hotel. I walked through. You could cut it up. It's a really interesting kind of place, because I can imagine I've come up from the city, from my fabulous home in the city for a weekend in Lake Forest. I get a big suite with a great big room, maybe several rooms.
Sure.
Look out over the 4 acres of lawns, go downstairs where I'm served a meal the way they do at Mar-a-Lago, where people are eating in this fabulous dining room, and we might swim, our kids might swim in the pool, whatever it would be. It would be a nice sort of a weekend place if you live downtown.
But it could only house so many guests, right?
I mean, yeah, well, it's 1/5 the size of Mar-a-Lago, but it also doesn't have a Florida climate.
Right, okay. So the trying to sell it maybe as that, or divide it up as condos.
Divide it up into, so 22,000 feet, you might divide up into 5 4,000 foot condos, something like that.
And Lake Forest says, hey, we want to keep the property, right? We don't want to raise it, so let's see what we can do.
Exactly. It has an architectural heritage. It's by David Adler, who was the architect of many important mansions. It's got this history, these names we were using. And it also occupies a sort of a central spot in Lake
Forest. I do
know
where this spot is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So if you take it down, if somebody took it down, they might put up some big carbuncle of a modern mansion that doesn't fit in with all the historical mansions there. So the city of Lake Forest has said, sure, bring us ideas. They don't want to see it torn down.
Yeah, it's Dennis Rodkin. You can read more of that at chicagobusiness.com. We're going to take a break, come back, and talk about which suburbs are hot, which ones aren't so much, and maybe you're in the mood to buy a rental property. He'll tell you where. 1222, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Next time Dennis Rodkin is here, we're just going to record the discussion during the commercial breaks and then replay those, because I think,
well, because we're so smart off the air,
doggone it, they're just fascinating. Actually, I do enjoy it. We were talking about different towns and how they sort of create a little community and things like that, and I guess that segues a little bit into what we're talking about next. Is so the high-end towns, Lake Forest, they've got, and tell me about the time waiting or the number of homes on a market, right? That's how you describe.
Yeah, well, month supply of inventory is you take the number of homes that are on the market today and how many homes sold this month and divide it. And so if there are 100 homes on the market and there were 10 sold this month, then you have 10 months of inventory on the market.
You want to have about 7?
You want to have like 4 to 6, 5 to 7, around in there. That's where it's balanced. That's where neither sellers nor buyers predominate. And it also means that there's sort of a healthy turnover of homes, because when you've got this, as Lake Forest has and other places have had, 11 months worth of inventory, it does a lot of things. I as a seller get sort of bored and irritated. Why the heck hasn't my home sold? I'm tired of the open houses, that kind of thing. And as a buyer, I think, well, geez, if that's been on the market so long, it probably has something bad about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go from there, where it's 11 months, to a place like Glendale Heights, where it's about 6 weeks.
Yeah. Where we've got several middle class suburbs with below 2 months inventory. And a lot of people, I hesitated to use the word in the story, but a lot of real estate agents and things say below 2 months, it's dangerous, in part because if all of a sudden people come along looking, you know, I mean, that's really very few homes. So again, if you had 10 sales last year, that means we have like 15 last month, means we have about 15 on the market. If I'm a buyer, I'm very likely to have to pay more. I'm likely to be outbid in a bidding war. And I'm just likely to get frustrated and think, well, heck, I need a home. Where am I going to, what am
right.
I going to do?
So dangerous in that you might be forced into making a bad decision too quickly.
Yeah, exactly. But it also,
or you might assault your realtor. That's not, part
you might,
of it.
I don't no, think that's no. good, but okay. you might, yeah, but the town, I mean, you just might run out of options.
And so that's Glendale Heights. Where else are we talking about?
There are several. There's Lyle. I'm sorry, I don't have the list in front of me. I did this story 2 weeks ago.
I love
ago,
when Steve. You when we talk and you say, I think I wrote in the story.
Yeah, I wrote. Know, well, I wrote this 2 weeks ago.
You've got
ago.
What's in your brain and then what's
exactly.
on paper.
Elk Grove Village and Bolingbrook were the other two with the shortest supply. And the thing about those towns, Buffalo Grove was one of them. These are all places right in the middle of our price range. There, where the median price is at approximately $200,000. It's middle-class buyers. A lot of what's going on is the sellers have sat on this house long enough that it's finally not underwater. Right. They can afford to move. Some are still underwater or are thinking, gee, prices have gone up so much, I can't really get purchase on a big one to move to because I don't have a lot of equity in my house. So short supply and high demand because middle class people, you know, I've healed my credit, we're both employed, those kinds of things. Let's get out and buy, and they're picking them off the market.
Right, grass is on fire.
Exactly.
So we've talked in the past about buying homes under stress to turn them around or rent them and things
yeah.
like that. You also write a piece about where that market is hot, right? Will County is the best place to go?
Yeah, right now. So there's a forecast from Adam, which is a real estate data service, and they sort of looked at the yield in about 350 counties around the country. They only did four in this area. They didn't have enough data for some counties, but in of Cook, Lake, DuPage, and Will counties, the highest yield they forecast is nearly 10%, 9.9% for people who buy single-family rentals in Will County, fix them and deploy them, which is that's a nice return on investment.
Yeah, not too bad. Okay, so we got that. Dennis Rodkin here. You read more at chicagobusiness.com. And, well, I'll meet you up at Mar-a-Lago in Lake Forest.
Yeah, right. We'll both be members.
We'll both be arrested. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're going to talk later on this program with Rochelle Garner. She's the features editor at CNET.com. We often talk to Ian Schur this time of the week, but Ian's got the day off. You know, the Samsung Galaxy S8 was released, and well, the one they had before that, the Galaxy Note 7, not so good. So they're trying to erase the memories of that. We will talk to Rochelle about that a little bit later. Elise Glink is often here on Thursdays as well, and she's in the studio now. Elise, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Nice to be here. Nice to be here when you're here.
I know, and because you're usually here when I'm not.
Right, we're like Clark Kent and Superwoman.
All right, so, you know, Dennis Rodkin was just here.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw a few curveballs at you.
Of course.
Because we're changing things up a little bit, but Rodkin was just in here, and, you know, we usually talk about the housing numbers, the Case-Shiller report. We didn't get a chance to do it. Mm-hmm. We're talking about instead high-end homes that I would never be allowed to visit. But the fact is that when you look at the housing market in Chicago, we still, I think, are trailing the nation as a whole, but we're heating up a little bit.
We are heating up a bit. It's interesting, when I was in the green room, but just before coming on, I fielded a call from the FHFA, the Federal Housing Finance Administration, and they're doing one last push to try and get people to participate in HARP, the Home Affordable Refinance Program that the government puts out, because there's basically this one last opportunity before the program expires in September, and Chicago has been lagging in the number of people. We've had so many homes that are underwater for so long.
Right.
That we're lagging in the number of people who've taken advantage of this program, but it's out there to be taken advantage of.
How do you take advantage of it? What is it?
You can go to harp.gov. So if you're underwater, if your house still hasn't normalized and it's worth less than the mortgage amount, or it's not not really, you might be functionally underwater in that if you tried to sell your house, it wouldn't, the closing costs and everything else, you'd probably have to bring cash to the closing table. You're probably able to qualify for this government program. And if you go to HARP, H-A-R-P, like, you know, the musical instrument, harp.gov, they have a whole long list of rules and who qualifies, but it's a great program.
All right, so there's that if you're interested mm-hmm. in buying a home and take advantage of that program before it goes away.
Yeah, for refinancing. Now, if you want to buy a house, there's obviously, this is my view, we've got mortgage interest rates going up. They're kind of hanging around the 4%. They're level for a 30-year fixed. home prices are going up. And so one of the things you're going to see come out over the next 2 days is that the affordability has dropped. So Adam, and I heard Dennis Rodman talk about the Adam report, was released at midnight today. And it basically said that Chicago's housing and housing across the country is much less affordable than it was because of rising home prices.
Sure. Okay, so there's that. You're usually here to talk about marketing as well. And let's just market the state of North Carolina.
Well, you would be able to say, we're changing rules so that you'll come back and use any bathroom you want and just, you know, bring your business with you.
or leave your business here.
Leave your business here.
Leave your business there. I like that one.
Puns are always good.
Not always. No, they're not. No.
So there's what's going on in North Carolina. Everybody remembers the transgender bathroom blunder that we saw and what happened in response to the state of North Carolina basically saying, we want to regulate where you go to the bathroom and how you identify your bathroom
or
needs.
Who goes in which bathroom.
Or who goes in where.
It's such a typical American thing that we get so worked up about such a small, right? I mean, when I say small issue, I don't mean unimportant. To a lot of people, it's very important. But there's so very few instances of this, right?
So what's interesting is, of course, this came out during the presidential election cycle, and now President Donald Trump said, heck, I don't care where people go to the bathroom.
Yeah, he said that during the campaign, too.
He did, and that was really the right response. And, of course, now that he's in office, this has become a thing. But what's interesting is that businesses have been voting with their pocketbooks. So a lot of business, big business, sports business, pulled out of North Carolina. And that got legislators' attention. And I think as of this week, they're now coming together to craft a new and improved solution for maybe the third time, hoping people will come back.
They agreed on a compromise last night. It went through committee in the Senate this morning. And I'm just looking now. It just within the past few minutes passed out of the Senate, 32-16. So 2-1 margin there. It will go to the House.
Right. And they expect that this will pass. Now, whether this will satisfy bathroom rights advocates, I don't know. But really, they're still going to lose $3.6 billion worth of business because of this, because these kinds of conventions and sporting events book so far in advance.
And that brings us to the marketing part. How do you bring them back?
You really have to push out and say, mea culpa, we made a mistake. Because the one thing that America likes better than almost anything else is when people own up to their mistakes.
Right.
And they acknowledge them and they say, I'm not going to do that again. And if North Carolina can bring itself to be that forthright, it'll probably help them.
We'll see, won't they? Because they not only do they have to bring people back, they've got to find a way to make up a lot of lost revenue, I would think.
They do, and I'm not quite sure how you make up $3.6 billion plus all the ancillary money that floats around, but eventually they'll get there.
All right, so that's what's going on in North Carolina, a little bit up the coast and in at Washington, D.C. The Supreme Court had a ruling yesterday.
Yeah, this was interesting.
It's fascinating to me, and I talked a little bit with Terry Savage about it yesterday, too, just as it was happening. Why don't you describe it? Because I've tried once before.
So here's the thing. When you go, you know that you go to restaurants sometimes and they'll have a sign out and it says it's $4 for your coffee, but we prefer cash. And if you pay cash, it's $3.60.
Do we see that much? I remember gas stations did it in the maybe 80s or so.
We're still seeing it, actually. Yeah. And there is a difference when you pay cash. And if you don't ask if there's a different price for paying cash, you probably should. But merchants have been really loath to actually bring this up with people or say, you know, give these opportunities because their merchant seller agreements with places like Visa and MasterCard and American Express are pretty much like, if you do that, we're going to rip this from you.
Right. They could not disclose.
Disclose how they communicated that price differential. So went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court weighed in, I believe it was yesterday.
Yeah, it was yesterday, unanimous ruling.
That, no, I'm sorry, free speech prohibits this sort of clamping down, and if merchants want to communicate that there's a price difference, they should be able to.
Fascinating to me that it wasn't decided on commerce or any sort of regulation that way. The justices or the appellants made a free speech argument.
Right. Which is so interesting. Now, I'm not a lawyer, although I'm married to one, but I will read you what John Roberts wrote for the majority. He said, the law tells merchants nothing about the amount they're allowed to collect from cash or credit payers, but they are free to charge $10 for cash, $9.70, $10, $10.30, or any other amount for credit. What the law does regulate is how sellers may communicate their prices. That's a direct quote from John Roberts, who was writing for the majority.
So the case is called Expressions Hair Design versus Schneiderman. Schneiderman's the AG, I think, right, in New York. And Expressions Hair Design is, well, it's just a fabulous place. And it's one of the businesses that sued. Yeah. So they could say, at least come in, let me cut your hair. I'll charge you 10 cents less if you pay cash. They can't say, I'll charge you 10 cents more if you pay by credit card.
Right. I think they can communicate that in any way they want. What the credit card company can't do is prohibit them from saying there's a price differential if you pay cash versus paying credit. And that's what they were trying to do, force you to get your people to pay the same amount no matter which one you used, which just meant that you as the merchant were eating the difference.
So what we're learning too is that the people who are really getting ripped off here are the ones who are paying cash.
Right, because they're not getting the benefit of cash.
Elise Klink, thanks very much for coming by today.
It's a pleasure.
You want to introduce the handsome fellow in the studio?
I do. I have my young son, my 21-year-old son, Alex, with me. And he's on spring break.
He was shaking your head. No, everything you said. I don't know what that's about.
He's smarter than me.
Elise Klink is the publisher of ThinkLink.com and the CEO of Best Money Moves. It's an HR app for businesses that helps workers measure their financial stress and then dial it down. Check it out at thinklink.com.
Yeah, it's going great.
Is it?
Yeah, we'll talk about it next week.
Let's do that. All right. Thanks for coming by.
Sure.
Thanks very much, Steve Alexander and Kim Gordon, Jill Egan as well. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. My name is Steve Bertrand. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or my public Facebook page, Steve Bertrand as well. Lots to talk about, and we keep the conversation going there from time to time. On a phone line now is Rochelle Garner. She is the features editor at CNET. And we got a lot to talk about when it comes to the new Galaxy S8 phone. Rochelle, welcome to the Business Lunch.
My pleasure. And you're right. There's a lot to talk about with the S8.
Okay, so I'm going to try to do all this without making fire jokes, but I don't think I'm capable. I'm just not up to it. But the fact is, they just had a disaster, right? And they're coming out with this phone in an effort to sort of put the disaster of the Galaxy Note 7 behind them.
Well, it's absolutely true that a lot rides on this phone. So their hope is that we forget about it. They have a chance of possibly, if this pays off for them, this could be a massive comeback, one of the biggest comebacks in corporate history, right after Apple, when Steve Jobs returned and basically pulled that company out from the brink. So there's a chance to be a comeback, sort of get the consumer trust back. And also, it's very important for them to get a head start on Apple, which is going to be having its very important iPhone launch, the 10th anniversary iPhone, whatever that's going to be called. We're going to be seeing that news in September.
In a way, I mean, and again, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but they've created demand. A lot of people who had Samsung phones don't have them now or are looking for new ones because they had to get rid of their last one.
You're absolutely right. So it's a big question there. There are studies that say that when you've switched, and a lot of people did switch back to Apple, you don't really go back because it's kind of hard to make that switch with the iOS. So there's a lot riding here. A lot of people, look, the Note 7 was considered a fabulous phone. Up until
right.
Up until it wasn't. And so a lot of people are waiting for it. Others basically said the hell with that, and they've moved on to Apple. So we'll have to see what happens when this phone really does hit stores April 21st. Those who pre-order it also get a free VR goggle. So that might sweeten the deal some. Who knows?
I have this feeling that in 4 or 5 years, we're going to have 6 and 7 pairs of complimentary VR goggles in all of our closets.
Well, if that could happen, we're going to have to see, really, frankly, which one makes you less sick. There's an element of VR there. Yeah. Kind of unsettles the stomach, you might say.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be worked out.
Well, I was reading the review at CNET about this new Galaxy S8. Why don't you tell me? I mean, what are the reviews on it? How does it look?
Well, these are first takes. So one of the big things that people are really looking at is Bixby, which is one of the artificial intelligence, the smart assistant, sort of like, not exactly, like Alexa or Siri. And this is definitely a work in progress. according to our reviewer here, Jessica Dolcourt. So it sounds very cool. The difference with this from all the others is that Bixby, the AI assistant here, is really intended to help you control your phone. And beyond that, Samsung sees this as the connective tissue, if you will, with all of their appliances. Their goal is to put this AI assistant in the washing machines, the refrigerators, the phones, whatever the hell that's going to have a Samsung brand on it. You might be able to say, Bixby, add more bleach. I'm waiting for that.
Wow. So they're really thinking big on this. They're not worried just about recovering the phone biz, but how they're going to move into others as well.
Absolutely. I mean, they're already into these appliances.
Oh, sure.
And what they've told us is we had a reporter go to South Korea several weeks ago, and they really see Bixby as sort of like the way that they're going to be able to connect all of their appliances, to be able to give a voice command, although, frankly, I'm not quite sure what voice command I want to give my refrigerator. Maybe I'm just lack imagination.
Yeah, I know. They keep telling me that I'm going to be in the grocery store and be able to look inside my fridge to see what I'm missing, but I just don't feel there's a big demand for that just yet, Rochelle.
Yeah, you and I are on the same page on that one.
All right, so the bottom line is, should people go out and buy this phone? Maybe wait for it to shake out a little bit, or what's your advice?
I would certainly, my advice would be never to take my advice because I'm a news person and not a reviewer.
Okay.
Beyond that, I would say it's got some really interesting things going for it. It's very tall. It's stunning. It's got some features that sound fabulous. But you know, we're at the stage now where nobody has had a chance to really review it. They've had a first look, which means maybe they've had a couple of hours to play with it. So let's wait to see what the reviews say when people like Jessica Dolcourt have had a chance to really put this thing through its paces. Does it work? How does it compare? And frankly, I would also wait to see what happens with a big anniversary phone from Apple. Because those are going to be comparable phones. That's where you're going to have your choice made. And so, personally, I plan to wait for a little bit. But don't take my advice because, as I said, I'm just in news.
I like to find journalists who say they won't give advice and then make them do it. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.